uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's time for our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent, neither Democrat nor Republican, an independent member of the House of Representatives, longest-serving member in the history, did I say Senate, in the U.S. House of Representatives, in the history of the United States House of Representatives. His website, bernie.house.gov or bernie.org. Congressman Sanders, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And I should add that for folks who want to drop into our live chat room and participate, go to TomHartman.com and click live chat. It'll drop you right in there, along with some of the finest minds on the entire Internet. And if you'd like to call into the program and speak with Congressman Sanders, if you have questions, comments, complaints, concerns, praise, you know, all are welcome. Our telephone number, 1-866, toll-free across the United States, 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, we're hearing that gas prices are coming down a little bit. This is what I heard on the news this morning.
Well, they're coming down a little bit, but they are substantially higher than they used to be.
Yeah.
No question about that. Everybody who fills up a tank of gas knows that. And also in rural areas, in Vermont and other rural areas around this country, these high gas prices are taking money out of people's paychecks big time. And people are spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars a year more just to go to work and to come back. And, you know, in rural areas, people often have to travel quite a distance to go to work. Some of us in Congress have been trying to address this whole issue. And we are proposing a multi-prong approach that I wanted to mention to the listeners. For a start, you know, Tom, you and I talk on this program a lot about so-called unfettered free trade and what it's doing to the middle class and working class and so forth and so on.
Right.
And at a time when you have corporate America telling us just how great free trade is, you know, you've got an organization sitting there called OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. And the very existence of OPEC is as a cartel to limit production, correct?
Right. Yeah. It's a trust. If it were here in the United States, it would be in violation of the Sherman Act.
So doesn't it strike anybody as somewhat interesting that at a time when we have President Bush and all of these guys talking about just how great free trade is, you got a trust there whose very function in life is to limit production, to act as a cartel. Some of us are trying to get the President of the United States to tell the World Trade Organization to break up that cartel so that more oil can come into the United States and we can lower the prices of oil. That's number one. Number two, obviously, in terms of getting automobiles on the road that get us the kind of mileage per gallon that we need, we are way, way, way behind. We're doing worse rather than better. So what we're trying to do is raise what we call the CAFE standards to make sure that cars sold in America get substantially more miles per gallon. We have pumped billions of dollars literally into Detroit to help them work on cars, and yet interestingly it's the Japanese who are coming up with the hybrid cars. There is no reason why we should not be substantially increasing the mileage per gallon that we are looking at. And furthermore, while oil prices, gas prices are rising, there has not been a sufficient look at the kind of profits being generated by the largest oil companies in this country. Over the last 4 years, the five largest companies, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Texaco, ConocoPhillips, BP, Amoco, and Royal Dutch Shell, made over $205 billion in total profits. And last year, the oil companies earned $87 billion of profits, an increase of almost 40% over 2003. So the average worker is paying more and more at the gas pump, and yet these big oil companies are making out like bandits.
It's incredible, Bernie. And in fact, they're sitting on so much cash that the Wall Street Journal says it's a crisis for the CEOs because they're not sure what to do with all this cash.
Well, we all have our problems in life, I'm sure. And the last thing that we're working on, we had an amendment on the floor which failed. Did not get the support that we wanted from the Democrats and got almost no support from the Republicans, is to start releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We have almost 700 million barrels of oil in the reserve. It's about 99% filled up now. If we can bring some of that oil out into the marketplace, that could drive oil prices down as well. So some of us are cognizant of the fact that a lot of working people are losing money they can't afford to lose, that the aviation industry, the trucking industry, the whole economy is suffering as a result of these high prices. And we're working on a number of approaches to try to lower the price.
Now, it's not just OPEC, by the way. The Wall Street Journal, which is amazing to read because it's like the rich talking to the rich.
But they're a good newspaper. You know. They will often give you very good information.
Well, that's the point. I mean, they just tell the truth because they figure the average American's not reading the Wall Street Journal. And so they just lay it out. I mean, they did a groundbreaking piece 6 months ago on how healthcare is being rationed in the United States based on your income.
Right.
And but just this week, right on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, there was a graph, and it showed that 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the oil industry, the domestic petroleum industry in the United States, made around 75 cents a barrel in profit refining a barrel of oil into whatever it becomes, you know, half a barrel or whatever of gasoline, 75 cents. And now they're making almost $4 a barrel in profit. So it has nothing to do with the price of oil. They're using the increase in the price of oil as an excuse to jack up their profit margins and screw us. And it's right on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, and not one single national mainstream media picked it up.
Well, even worse, there's just among the Republican leadership in Congress who receive huge amounts of money from the oil industry. I mean, there's been no discussion on this at all.
Yeah,
but we got a real crisis. I mean, you know, when Bush talks about, oh, we gave tax breaks to the middle class and a few hundred dollars, yeah, forget it. That's gone. That's gone at the gas pump. You're putting more in the gas pump than you got in your tax break. So it's a very serious problem impacting the whole economy.
Yeah, and also you folks, my understanding is you've asked for, well, here it is, at a press conference in the U.S. Capitol today, Congressman Sanders joined a bipartisan coalition of members in Congress urging Speaker Hastert to allow a vote on prescription drug importation. Here,
right.
This is like everybody's talking about the filibuster in the Senate, that the Frist is running around going, hey, they deserve an up or down vote. Everybody deserves an up or down vote. You're asking for an up or down vote on prescription drug importation, and you have a majority of the members of the House of Representatives co-signing this thing with you, a majority, and Denny Hastert and Tom DeLay will not allow you to have a vote. Is that really what's going on?
That is really what's going on. I was the first member of Congress to take constituents over the Canadian border to point out the absurdity of Americans being forced to pay, in some cases, 10 times more for the same exact medicine that you can get in Canada. And in fact, in Europe, in many cases, it's even cheaper than in the United States. So what's happened, it's taken us a long time. But in fact, there have been some very good Republicans on this issue, guys who have had the guts to stand up. They've taken on the pharmaceutical industry. We've put together a real tripartisan coalition, which won last year on the floor of the House, I think by 60 or 70 votes. It took us a long time. We finally have the votes in the Senate. You have people like Ted Kennedy and Trent Lott, Byron Dorgan, working together on the bill. So we now have the votes in both bodies, the House and the Senate, to pass reimportation, which means, essentially, that pharmacists in the United States will be able to buy their medicine at the same price that pharmacists in Canada or in Europe, which means a 25 to 50% reduction in the price of prescription drugs in this country. We now have the votes in both bodies. What we did is sent a letter yesterday to Hastert with over a majority of members saying, Mr. Speaker, give us a vote. You don't like the idea? That's fine. Take all the time you want on the floor of the House to speak against us. You can represent the pharmaceutical industry. Give us a damn vote so that the American people can know that in America, democracy rules. Are we going to get that vote? We will see, but don't hold your breath on that.
Yeah, and so far, no vote.
So far, no vote. And so far, this pharmaceutical industry has enormous power. And the result back home, when you talk to people, is just a real, real, real tragedy. With older folks, doctors will tell you that they write out these prescriptions for seniors, you know, don't have a lot of money.
Right.
And the seniors can never, they don't fill the prescriptions at all. They don't have the money to do it. So we continue to pay the highest prices in the world. People do not fill their prescriptions. People suffer. People die. And Mr. Hastert will not even give us a vote when there are dozens and dozens and dozens of Republicans who are with us wanting this vote. But you got a Congress today which is very, very tightly controlled. and which is really doing the work of multinational corporations, whether in this case it's the oil company or the drug companies, same thing.
You guys should hold a press conference and claim that you're being filibustered by Hastert and DeLay.
But interesting enough, we did hold this press conference, and we did not get a whole lot of national media on that.
Oh, really?
No.
So you've held it, because I've seen nothing about this in the national press. I mean,
right.
I picked this up off Bernie.house.gov.
Here's the story. I mean, one might think this is of interest. You know, you talk about all the acrimony, appropriately enough, that's going on, all the partisanship. You have Republicans, Democrats, progressive coming together, majority of members, give us a vote, let's lower the cost of prescription drugs. Very little media attend to that.
And this hits the lives of everybody. I mean, there's not a single family in America that's not affected by this one way or another.
Obviously, many seniors, but people have chronic illnesses and so forth. Now, the good news, by the way, in terms of this whole fight, is we're making some real progress. Millions of Americans are now, in fact, you know, purchasing their medicine abroad at substantially lower prices. But even better, what's happened is now, I think it's five states. Recently, the state of Vermont has passed reimportation legislation, which makes it legal for the people in those states. I think it's Minnesota, Wisconsin, Vermont, a few other states, who can now do that. And we have information on that on our website. But the real fight is to make sure that pharmacists are able to do that, and that is not the case. That's why we need this national legislation.
Okay. Today in the Detroit Free Press, Bernie, there was an article in the auto news section, kind of buried down in the business section by Jeffrey McCracken. The headline, Would GM Risk Gutting Retiree Health Benefits? And then the subhead, Wall Street Analysts Say Yes, It Could Happen. And they're saying this is a viable option now that is being seriously considered by GM to do essentially the same thing the United Airlines is doing. It's spreading. What can we do about this?
Absolutely, it's spreading. United has started it. We know, and I believe this is an issue we have been working very, very hard on in Vermont, because we had IBM workers who were threatened with major cutbacks in the pensions that have been promised to them. In fact, IBM workers have seen a cutback in the retiree benefits that they expected to receive. I think with United being given the green light by the courts to slash its pension program, I have very little doubt that other corporations will not try to do the same thing. And we are, in fact, in Congress trying to work on efforts to figure out how we can stop that, because this will be just horrendous for millions of families. There are people, I mean, who worked at a job for 20 or 30, 40 years with the full expectation. And the reason, one of the reasons that they stayed at that job is that there were certain pension plans that were promised to them. And to see that these things are being undermined is just another huge attack on the middle class of this country. And Congress has got to act boldly to stop that.
Yeah, in America, we've always said, if you play the game by the rules, if you work hard, if you put in your life and commit yourself to your job, we'll make sure that you're taken care of. And that social contract, the Republicans are saying, well, the conservatives, well, whatever you want to call them, the radicals are saying,
extremist is the word.
There you go, extremist, thank you. Social contract, we got no stinking social contract. We have to bring it back. Well said. Congressman Bernie Sanders is our Brunch with Bernie segment. If you'd like to talk with Bernie, 1-866-889-8894. We'll be back with your calls right after this.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's congressman, in my mind, the only independent member of the House of Representatives. Bernie.org on the internet, or house.bernie.gov are his websites. If you'd like to call into the program and speak with Congressman Sanders during this hour, our telephone number, 866, toll free, 866-889-8894. And Bernie, let's go right to the phone lines, if that's all right with you. Okay, Alice in Northern California, listening on, I assume, KGOE there in Eureka, California. Alice?
Hello.
Hi, Alice. You're live over there.
Bernie?
Hi, Alice.
Making voting machines honest with records that can be recounted should be your top priority, I believe. I worry about the voting machines.
And Alice is old enough to remember FDR.
Oh, 91. I remember a lot of things.
Well, Alice, I agree with you, and I know Tom and I have talked about this issue a whole lot, and Tom has done some writing about it, and we are doing our best to make sure that every vote cast in America is a vote that's counted, and we are very concerned about these touchscreens.
Yeah, it's top priority, really. It's really very important.
It is. Thank you.
Well, nice to have talked to you.
Alice, thank you very much for calling. 1-866-889-8894. Spike in Easton, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Spike.
Hey, greetings from Miss Gonzo. Bernie, a real quick point before I ask my question to go with Alice said. In Pennsylvania recently in our primaries, a county in the state had election machines with the old, pull a lever, and the company that was in charge of them forgot to put safety barriers down. So if someone went in and pulled every lever down at some point trying to make up their mind, they actually voted for every single candidate, and more votes were cast than registered voters in those districts. So I guess in a way maybe paper ballots would also work much better than any machine.
So you think we should go back to the past, right?
More or less.
Or go forward into the past and use paper ballots.
Yes. Let's go back to the future.
Yeah. But my bigger question is, I live in the city of Easton, and I'm about 20 minutes east in Pennsylvania from a city Billy Joel made very famous with a song called Allentown. Allentown really suffered hard years ago with manufacturing vanishing. They kind of had a rebirth, but at this point, everywhere, especially Allentown lately, has been on the decline. What would you do or suggest America needs to do to save, I mean, that's the third largest city in Pennsylvania. It's not a little town. To save some pretty big towns at times that are almost close to major sports markets that are really starting to struggle with jobs.
Well, Spike, I think for a start, we need to fundamentally rethink our trade policies. And I know that Pennsylvania, of course, has been a big steel state for many, many years, and they're hurting, and that's true all over America. What we have got to do is make sure the trade policies do not allow these large corporations to force American workers to compete against people in China or Mexico who make pennies an hour. And the good news in that regard is I think even in Congress, as conservative and corporate-dominated as that institution is, you're seeing a change. You're seeing a change of attitude. For example, this CAFTA bill, which the president is trying to push, is in real trouble. I believe if there was a vote on CAFTA today, it would lose. But that's not enough. We've got to revise entirely our trade policy so that corporations start investing in America rather than in China. Right now, they can invest all over the world and bring their products back into this country virtually tariff-free. The result has been the loss of almost 3 million good-paying manufacturing jobs, and we're beginning to hemorrhage good-paying information technology jobs. So I would say that that's one of the areas we got to take a hard look at.
Thanks a lot, Spike. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. So, Bernie, we've got about 20 seconds. It's a change in our trade policies. Do you think we should pull out of WTO, NAFTA, GATT, all that stuff?
I think we should, to be honest with you. I think we've got to rethink. I mean, let me be clear. Trade is a good thing. When it is fair trade, when it is based on the needs of our workers and not just the CEOs of large corporations. So I think we've got to fundamentally rethink our entire trade position.
Start over from scratch and do it right the next time.
I think so.
Well said. Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders, is our Brunch with Bernie segment. Our telephone number 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on with Congressman Sanders, 29 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman radio program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, our regular weekly segment, when Congressman Bernie Sanders comes on and shares his time with us and takes your phone calls, 866-889-8894. Bernie, before we go to the next call, I have a question for you, if I may.
Sure.
The Flory, what's her name? Carly Fiorina. She was the CEO of Hewlett-Packard. They bought out Compaq, and it caused their stock price to drop, so she got fired. But she's making a fortune now, going around speaking to business groups. She's like one of the most sought-after speakers. She just gave a speech at the Detroit Economic Club Monday of this week, and she said, and I quote, "There is no job that is America's God-given right anymore," end quote. And they say her message, delivered with charisma and forcefulness, has made her a much-desired speaker. She says Americans must realize that we are competing against countries that want to do work and have skills necessary to do the same jobs done here. What has happened? What has happened, Bernie, to Americans saying, hey, listen, there is the purpose of the economy is to support the people, not the other way around? Where have we gone wrong? How did this confusion, how could she get away with saying this?
It's not confusion. These guys know exactly what they want to do, and now they have the gumption and they have the power to do it. Essentially translating what she said, what you just read, into plain English is, to hell with every worker in America. We're going to go to China. There's nothing you could do about it. And maybe we'll stay in the United States if you, as American workers, are prepared to see a substantial reduction in your wages and your health care benefits and the environmental standards of this country. Maybe then we'll provide jobs for you. But by the way, thank you very much for all of the tax breaks you've given us, all of the corporate welfare, all the work that the workers did to make us rich. We really do appreciate it. Have a nice day. We're off to China. That's the translation of what you just said.
And she's speaking at the Detroit Economic Club. She gets a standing ovation.
Sure, because all these other guys are doing the same thing, and they like the, you know, it's not no different. The head of General Electric a few years ago, Jeff Immelt, said, when we look to the future of General Electric, we see China and China and China. Now, what is very interesting, you know, Tom, in the midst of all of this stuff, is that for so many years we heard our Republican friends tell us how anti-communist they were and how anti-authoritarian they were. You remember that?
How they loved
America. And now, man, they love communist China. They just love it. It's a great place to do business. It is the absolute, you know, it is vulgar to say the least. And these people are just working night and day to lower the standard of living of American workers, to make the richest people in this country even richer. And, you know, they have a significant degree. They own what goes on in Congress.
Yeah, astounding. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Good. What's up?
Well, it's become obvious to me that the extremists particularly are in drastic need of therapy. And since they're not going to get that, I think behavior modification is the key.
What's your point?
And that requires, my point is organized boycotts against these companies, mm-hmm. and these extremists that are doing this. And I just don't see this happening. I don't see people, you know, I don't see the list compiled. I don't see the information on these companies. I'm ready to do it myself, to be honest.
But Dave, I think they make, you know, these guys get away with murder, and I think it would not hurt for people to say, excuse us, if that is your attitude, if you have so much contempt for the American people, obviously you don't want us to be buying your product. I mean, I think there are a number of strategies. I'm not saying that's going to be the strategy that turns it around, but it is an interesting strategy and one I think people should begin to look at.
Yeah, well said, Dave. In fact, I have to say, Bernie, the day after Carly Fiorina said this, I went out and bought a new laptop because the one I had croaked. And they had HPs. She was the president of HP. They had HPs at Circuit City and Best Buy and whatnot, where I went shopping. And I said, no, I'm going to pass. Even though it's a great computer, I'm going to pass. Thank you very much. Ray in Salem, Oregon, on the line.
Oh, good morning, Tom.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Bernie. I've got a question for you. I'm just curious, is there any legislation coming up trying to encourage businesses to keep their jobs in the U.S.?
Yes. There are a variety of pieces of legislation, some stronger than others. One of the pieces of legislation that I have worked on is regarding the Export-Import Bank, which by and large is an agency and a program which provides a lot of corporate welfare to big, large corporations. And what we have insisted upon is that more of that money go to smaller businesses. And also what we have tried to do is to disqualify those large corporations who are throwing American workers out on the street from getting this type of corporate welfare. So what many of us are saying is, if you want to go to China, that's fine, but don't come to the taxpayers of this country for any help. if you want to create decent paying jobs in the United States of America, let's talk about that. We also passed on the floor of the House legislation which would have prohibited federal funds going to those companies, expatriate companies, that set up phony bank accounts in Bermuda or the Cayman Islands in order to
like Halliburton,
among many others.
Yeah.
That's right. So we wanted to discourage any federal money going to them. But there are some pieces of legislation not strong enough. It will not get passed in a Republican-controlled Congress, which essentially says, you want to go to China, you're not going to get any federal tax breaks, you're not going to get any federal subsidies. You want to create decent-paying jobs in America, let's talk about how we can work together.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Andy in Tampa, Florida on the line. Hey, Andy.
Hi, good afternoon. I'd like to ask Bernie one question. I've tried to call my congressman and never gotten a reply from this. I've got a solution, at least I think it is, to the deficit that we run every year. And my solution is very simple, along the lines of the best idea would be one that upset the most people because it's the most fair. Last year, if we ran, say, a 10% higher number of spending than we did in revenue, then this year, everybody who gets a higher number of spending than we did in revenue, then this year, everybody who gets a check from the Treasury, with the exception of people who got refunds on their taxes, would see a 10% cut.
Well, Andy, that's a concept called PAYGO, which is talked about in Congress. That means if you got to cut back. I wouldn't agree with your approach. One of the major reasons that we're running up a $400+ billion deficit is that our friend in the White House has given hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest 1%. I think the more appropriate way of dealing with the deficit is to rescind the tax breaks that go to the wealthiest people in this country and go to large corporations that take our jobs abroad and to move toward a fairer tax system, frankly. I think if we did that, we can, in fact, create a balanced budget in America.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Donna in Shiner, Texas, on the line. Hey, Donna.
Hi, Tom.
So with various financial service companies. They told financial service companies that if they were going to be supporting Bush's effort, that they were going to be taking money out of those accounts. And you know what? It's had an impact. Some of these companies have said to Mr. Bush, sorry, we're not joining your campaign. So I think when we exert a little bit of muscle, whether the AFL-CIO or just plain consumers, we can make them begin to listen to us. I think that's a great idea.
Well, I think it's a wonderful idea, and I think we should do it ASAP. And like I said, I'm sure there will be lots of volunteers to help out in this effort because it's got to be done.
Yeah.
They have to take us seriously.
There you go. Donna,
thank you so much.
Thanks so much for the call. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Robert in Mississippi on the line. Hey, Robert.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Man, I just want to say, I'll start with the conversation. I just turned on the radio, and you guys are such a breath of fresh air. I live in Mississippi, and I'm talking right-wing, Republican. If you're in Mississippi and you're a Democrat, that means you're either black or gay.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are just a great breath, I mean, fresh breath of air.
Robert, let me ask you this question,
because
I have some friends from Mississippi. Maybe you can help us out here. And I think to a large degree, you're right. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is that most white workers in Mississippi don't earn a whole lot of money. Many of them don't have health care. Their kids don't have health care.
Absolutely.
How do we reach out to those people and make them stand up, you know, for their own rights?
Well, moving here from New Orleans about 3 years ago, I have realized that the workers here have absolutely, they don't know their rights. They don't know their, I don't want to say rights, but, I mean, just privileges of being an employee. I don't want to mention any names of a fairly large corporation that just built a huge plant here. But, I mean, you know, I went in there and actually sat down and went through the hiring process, and they showed an anti-union propaganda film. It was unbelievable. And it was right on the edge of being illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean,
I sure do.
Really, I mean, you know, you have families here, hard-working guys. I mean, you know, I'm not going to try to stereotype this guy's in Mississippi, but we work hard and we work with our hands.
Sure you do.
You know? And, you know, there's no health benefits. I mean, people just... You know,
well, what we have got to do, Robert, I mean, you've raised a very interesting question, and it is very sad to me. I don't, you know, if some billionaire or millionaire wants to vote for right-wing Republicans, that's okay. But when you have hardworking people in Mississippi or elsewhere who don't have health care, can't send their kids to college, voting against their own best interest, that's very sad. And I think, you know, we have got to begin to focus on that. I don't believe that people in Mississippi are inherently any more conservative than other people. But one of the points that you made is I have the feeling when you turn on the radio in Mississippi, you got mostly right-wing stuff. Is that right?
Oh, I just let go of Robert. I thought you were wrapping it up.
Yeah,
sorry.
But I think that's what they get. And we've got to address that problem. A lot of good people in Mississippi who want decent things for their kids, and we can't forget about those folks.
Yeah, it's a problem of education as much as anything else. Joy in Santa Cruz is on the line.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Bernie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very happy that you signed on with that letter with John Conyers.
Good.
I really, really appreciate the fact that you're looking into the Downing Street memo and the war crimes. I mean, that's really important to all of us. But the question that I had is you brought up a point, and it's a very important point, that we need to bring back industry and manufacturing jobs to, say, places like Ohio and other places that have lost jobs. Now, my question is this. The steel industry is an incredibly polluting industry.
Uh-huh.
And how do we bring back a balance of both jobs and take care of the environment at the same time so that we don't cause more problems in the process of trying to get people to work?
Well, I think, you know, our right-wing friends always tell us that's a great conflict between, you know, jobs and the environment, and we can't have the environmental protection that we want. I don't believe that. I think that there is a lot of new technology out there, some of which may be fairly expensive, but there is technology out there that will allow us to produce almost any product that we want without destroying the environment.
Yeah,
but we're going to have to invest in that technology.
They have good scrubbers now for steel mills. It's possible to, and they use them in Japan, for example, very heavily. You can make steel without producing enormous amounts of pollution.
But I do believe, you know, getting back to that call a while ago, is if we continue to lose major industry after major industry and good-paying jobs that go with that, we're going to end up in a country that looks like Brazil, you know, where people are going to be working, you know, for $7-$8 an hour without any benefits, without any vacation, and that's not the America we want. So to answer your question, I think we can do both. I think we can create good jobs, and we can protect the environment.
And not become a banana republic,
exactly.
A Bushville. Amy in San Diego on the line. Hey, Amy, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Bernie. It's wonderful to be able to talk to you. I had a question. I'm glad that you signed on to that letter with John Conyers, and I was wondering, do you think eventually that articles of impeachment might be filed because of this memo?
No. And I don't. I'm not, you know, I know every now and then people call up on that. I'm not a great fan of going through an impeachment process. Then you end up with Dick Cheney as the president of the United States. And I think it takes attention away from the real issue that we have to face.
Mm-hmm.
And that is we have to organize the American people at a grassroots level.
Absolutely.
To get involved in the political process. And that's really where we have to focus, I think.
Thanks a lot, Amy, for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Al in Wyoming, Michigan on the line. Hey, Al.
Two things. Bernie, I've been trying to find out from my representative in the House of Representatives and Congress and the two senators about Terry Schiavo, since that paralyzed the government for so long, but the report hasn't come out yet.
Sorry, Al, I just don't know anything. I can't give you any good information on that.
Okay. Frank in Phoenix, you're on the line.
Hey there. I know there's not going to be any articles of impeachment. I understand that, especially with the voting trend the way it's going. But what I wanted to know, I mean, we can't let presidents get away with what Bush has done. Is there any way they can, after he leaves office, to be able to get him for war crimes or anything, Bernie? Because, I mean, it's a bad precedent to go after a president, you know, after he leaves office, but to not to do anything for all the things that he's done, that leaves the office bad also.
Yeah, I think what the Downing Street memo was about, in case some of the listeners don't know, was made public, was it out some weeks ago?
It was on May 1st.
May 1st. That the high-level people in the UK government, including, I guess, the head of their equivalent of the CIA, was discussing months and months before the breakout of the war that Bush had already decided to go to war, and they were going to use all of the evidence to kind of you know, to twist the evidence to talk about the need to go for war. In other words, that a lot of what Bush was talking about had already been determined. And clearly, you know, this talks very definitely to the fact that Bush wanted to go to war before he had any of the evidence to go to war.
A full 6 months before. This was in July 23rd of 2002, when he was still saying, you know, we don't know, we're thinking about it. He was lying to us. He was lying to us. Well said. Brunch with Bernie, 866-889-8894. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's congressman, the only independent member of the House of Representatives and the longest serving. His website, house.bernie.gov or bernie.org. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. John in Eugene, Oregon on the line. You're live with Congressman Sanders. John, what's up?
Hey, thank you very much, Bernie, Congressman Sanders, and thank you, Tom, for your comments. Just two real quick things. If you can see one movie, see The Corporation. If you could read one book, I suggest actually reading. I'm plugging your book, Tom. I think that The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, I can't see how it could be more simplified.
I appreciate that, John. Do you have a question for Bernie?
Hey, the guy is giving you a plug here, Tom.
I know, but it's, you know, but he can do that anytime, and I only have you 1 hour a week, Bernie. So.
Good point. Mind my manners here. Yes, are you aware, Congressman Sanders, that on the Department of Energy website, they outline, you know, state-by-state rules as far as compensation if you're tied to the grid with a solar panel? Almost without question, across the board, if anything you get via the sun in an annual snapshot that is more than you use, I know that's kind of hard to follow, but let's just say I just collected more than I used, like a big water bucket of rain, whatever.
Yeah.
All right, goes to the grid for free. It goes to the grid for free. You're not compensated for it.
So you're not compensated for the energy you produce. Bernie, you know about that?
I don't know specifically about that, but I do know that that is something that we are working on. We think that we want to encourage people to have solar energy, and if obviously you're producing more than you're using, you should be able to get some compensation when you put it into the grid.
Right. Run your
you
meter
are a
backwards.
Small electrical producer.
Yeah, run your meter backwards.
Exactly.
It just makes sense. Okay, Tim in Illinois, real quick. We have about 20 seconds, Tim. What's up?
Hi to both of you. Bernie, I'm curious to hear what you can say about what your colleagues are saying privately about the remarkable testimony of George Galloway. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Tim.
In fact, I
interviewed George yesterday.
I don't think they're saying a whole lot. I think some of them were taken quite aback by what he had to say, and some of them, at least, were not so happy about it. But I have not heard a whole lot of discussion about it.
In fact, apparently Norm Coleman has taken the testimony off the Senate website. Yeah, pretty amazing. And when I interviewed George Galloway on the radio yesterday about it, he said, well, that speaks well to their belief in democracy and freedom of information. He was rather indignant about it. Anyway, Bernie, thanks so much for being with us this week.
Good to be with you.
I do appreciate it. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Bernie.org on the website or house.bernie.gov. Congressman Bernie Sanders of Vermont, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Always a pleasure to have Congressman Sanders with us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you.
The Tom Hartman radio program broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365 on American FM, and of course in 29 states on cable radio network, on cable TV systems, CRN Digital, CRNI Digital now. John Bolton's bid to become the next ambassador to the United Nations, Andy Borowitz reports, suffered a setback today when People magazine named him the angriest man alive. Not exactly an appellation you'd want to carry. That, I suspect, tongue in cheek, that Andy Borowitz there. And also, scientists say they found the gene that causes fraud and ethics violations. Great news from the Swift Report here. In a major medical breakthrough that could have implications for corporate and political leaders alike, a team of scientists has announced that it has identified the genetic mutation that causes fraud, white-collar crime, and ethics violations. Scientists say the individuals who have the genetic disorder are more likely to embezzle funds, engage in questionable accounting practices, and fall prey to high-profile ethical lapses. Experts say gene therapy could hold the cure for House Majority Leader Tom DeLay. Well, at least it's not stem cell therapy, right? So, anyway, Tom DeLay, speaking of whom, a little upset with Law and Order, the TV show. How dare they? How dare they make a joke about him? In one episode, police are frustrated by a lack of clues. This is from crooksandliars.com, by the way. Frustrated by a lack of clues, leading one officer to quip, maybe we should put out an APB, an all-points bulletin, for somebody in a Tom DeLay T-shirt. In a letter to NBC Universal Television Group President Jeff Zucker, yes, Tom DeLay actually took the time to write a letter to the president of the NBC Universal Television Group. DeLay wrote, quote, this manipulation of my name and trivialization of sensitive issue judiciary security represents a reckless disregard for the suffering initiated by recent tragedies and a great disservice to public discourse, end quote. Oh, we really need to feel great sympathy for Mr. DeLay's suffering. It's a tragedy that he has been convicted three times by his own peers of ethical lapses in the House Judiciary Committee, and that several of his friends may be facing prison time, and that he himself may have a little to answer for, as Howard Dean pointed out, and will not back down from, God bless him. Producer Dick Wolf, creator of the Law & Order franchise, took a swipe at DeLay in his own statement on Thursday, saying, I congratulate Congressman DeLay for switching the spotlight from his own problems to an episode of a TV show. Which is exactly what this is all about. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. We're going to have the best of the rest of the news, by the way, at the bottom of the hour. It's going to be a great time. Get a couple of the leading experts in the news business, particularly the web-based news business, on the program to talk about, with us about what's been going on in the last week, what might be coming up in future weeks. And also, if you want to drop into our live chat room, where you can participate with some of the finest minds on the entire Internet, go to TomHartman.com and click live chat. 1-866-889-8894. Florian in Arlington Heights, Illinois, on the line. Hey, Florian.
Yes, hi, Tom. I tried to catch Bernie. My major question was, do you know where the letter to Haskert might be, a copy of the letter on the Internet? I haven't been able to find. I'm up on Bernie's website, and there's just a statement. There's no...
Yeah, I doubt you'd find it there. Have you tried Googling for it?
I'm doing that right now, and it doesn't appear to be okay.
Yeah.
Anything easy to find, I guess.
Well, Florian, if you can easily drop into our chat room, there's some real Google experts in there. If you do, just go to TomHartman.com and click live chat, and you have to hold down the control key when you click register, because it does a, you know, pops up a window for you to register in.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Okay, so you go to the chat room and ask somebody there, because it's probably going to be a long URL, and reading those things on the radio just never works. Nobody can write fast enough, and I can't talk slow enough. And so drop by the chat room, and if you don't have it there, if somebody there hasn't figured it out for you or gotten it for you in the next 10 or 20 minutes, call me back and we'll try it again.
Okay, fine.
Okay,
Thanks a lot,
Florian. Good to hear from you. I'm sorry I don't have the answer right off the tip of my tongue or whatever, but it seems like that would be a fairly straightforward thing. But, you know, then you never know. Anyhow, back to Tom DeLay. This is what has happened to Tom DeLay. Yesterday, a Texas judge ruled against Trimpac.
TRMPAC, the Texans for a Republican Majority. This is the political action committee that Tom DeLay put together in order to defeat Democrats in Texas. And he was successful. They knocked six Democrats out between their illegal redistricting, or, well, I guess it's legal by virtue of the fact that they did it and they haven't been called on it. But, see, the Constitution says that in every year ending with a zero, that is every 10 years, there will be a census, and in the following year, congressional districts will be redrawn to conform with the census so that, these particular areas grow in population, they get another congressman, other areas lose population, they may lose a member of Congress, that kind of thing. And it's right there in the Constitution. Every year ending with zero, every 10 years. Right there in the Constitution. Tom DeLay says, hey, we don't need no stinking Constitution. You know, he's a good friend of George Bush's. Bush says, Fourth Amendment, we don't need no rights of privacy. Come on, what, a judge to issue warrants? No. We can sneak and peek into your house. Come on, give me a break. So anyhow, Tom DeLay knocked out six Democratic members of the congressional delegation from Texas with the efforts of Trimpac. And it turns out that they have now been convicted of a crime. And the conviction found that U.S. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay was legally required to report more than $500,000, $500,000. This is not chump change in a state race, by the way. $500,000 in corporate cash to state authorities because the money was raised to influence Texas elections, and he failed to do so. Judge Joe Hart said in his ruling, I find that the contributions were used in connection with a campaign for elective office. Therefore, they were political contributions or campaign contributions within the meaning of the election code. Trimpac, of course, had claimed that they weren't, but he says they violated state law by not reporting the money to the Texas Ethics Commission. Now, he could have, now, as a result of Tom DeLay and Trimpac breaking the law in Texas, six Democrats lost their seats. The judge could have, I'm not sure if the judge could have ordered another election, but he certainly could have called for it in his ruling. He could have awarded them as much as $59.7 million, an amount of money that no doubt Tom DeLay would have access to. All he'd have to do is call one of his good buddies who've given him, a few million here, a few million there, and in exchange for that, he's inserted legislation that has made them in profits a few billion here and a few billion there. Texas having become one of the most polluted states in the United States since George Bush became governor and Tom DeLay became their member of Congress. And the Republicans took over the state of Texas. Jobs collapsing. Anyhow, the judge could have awarded as much as $59.7 million. But my guess is, and I don't know District Judge Joe Hart, so I can't say. I'm I can't even say I'm a reporter anymore. I used to be a reporter for many years. I'm just a talk show host and an author. And I don't live in Texas, so I don't know the details of this guy's personal politics. I'm not sure anybody does. He's there's not a lot about it in the media, but it looks to me, it smells to me, it seems to me that what happened is that this guy came along and said, okay, DeLay is guilty, and the Democrats were screwed. But instead of punishing DeLay and his political action committee, we're going to find the very minimum in favor of the Democrats. We're just going to award them lawyers' costs, court costs. So they're going to have the moral victory, but they don't have any financial benefit out of this thing. He limited damages and attorney's fees to $196,600 to be divided among five losing Democratic candidates who brought the lawsuit. If I said six, I was wrong. It was five. Could have been $59 million. Instead, it was less than 0.2 million, and just enough to pay the lawyers. Period. So Tom DeLay gets away again, skates on through. The former owner of Albo Pest Control, fellow who in his early years should have just said no when it comes to inhaling pesticides, and didn't. apparently. This really stinks to me. I just have to say, let me just toss in my editorial opinion. This really stinks. You go back and you look at the situation with the Ku Klux Klan and in down in the South where the judge there was this it was a white a separatist Nazi KKK guy and the judge in that case ruled that he had to give up so much of his assets, so much of his money that it wiped him out. He had to sell the land. In fact, you'll recall. His victims were able to come in and at auction, basically, with the money that he had to give them to buy his property out. It put them out of business. It put these guys out of business, these Klansmen, these KKKers, white supremacist Nazis. Put them out of business. This is what this judge should have done with Trimpac. He should have said, okay, you guys, you broke the law. You didn't report this $500,000. I was $500,000. Why not then at the very least give $500,000 to the Democrats? I mean, they're entitled to as much as $60 million, $59.7 million. And instead he says, well, okay, we'll give them court costs and lawyers' fees. It stinks. This would have been an opportunity to put DeLay and his buddies out of business, but I have a feeling that this judge lives in Texas. And he probably knows he's dealing with a bunch that behave like the Sopranos. You know, that if he had actually ruled in such a way that millions of dollars had to be taken from Trimpac and from Tom DeLay, which he certainly could have done because these guys clearly violated the law, if he had taken millions of dollars from them and given it to these five Democrats who they blew away by illegally hustling corporate money, if he had done that, I'm guessing that he's thinking in the back of his mind that when he goes home that night, he may find his house burned to the ground. That he may discover that his wife is getting obscene phone calls in the middle of the night. That he may find that his kids, even if they live in a different county, even if they live in a different state, are under attack. Keep in mind, this is an administration that goes after the wives of people who cross it. Look at what happened to Joe Wilson and his wife. To the best of my knowledge, this has never happened before in American politics. Politicians go after each other, but they don't go after family members. That's something that prior to Bush Jr. coming into office had been pretty much limited to the mafia. And now we're seeing it. And my guess is that good old Judge Joe Hart, if he wasn't in their pocket, he was scared to death of them. I may be wrong, but it sure looks that way to me. And I hope that some of my colleagues in Progressive Talk Radio are bringing this up, and it would be great if the media brought this. Why did the judge rule this way? Why did he let DeLay get off on this thing? What's really going on with the politics down there in Texas? Good question. 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Show a little passion, baby. Show a little style.
And welcome back, my friends. Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if Tom DeLay could show a little style instead of complaining when a TV show... they made a joke about me. How dare they? Oh, my. Ellen Ratner with us from the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hi. The president today was at Annapolis. As you know, every 4 years he goes, in a four-year tour, he goes to one service academy each year. And he used this as a time, because it is the class of 2001, and what, of course, is called the 9/11 class, as many high schools across the country and colleges, to really talk about what his strategic principles are in terms of war. He said, we're taking the fight to the enemy abroad so we don't have to face them here. We're denying terrorists sanctuary and making clear that America will not tolerate outlaw regimes. We're using all elements of national power to deny terrorists the chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons they seek. We will not allow mass murderers to gain access to the tools of mass destruction. We're stopping terrorists from achieving their ideological victories. So that was his big speech. He also talked about what he called his military transformation, and he said that people need to be on two difficult missions at once to defeat the terrorists and to transform the military. And he also was talking all about the money that he requested to $16 billion to build what he calls transformational military capacities.
It sounds to me like he's repeating the lies and nonsense that he used in 2002 to get the Republicans in the House and Senate, and in 2004 to try and get himself in as president, equating Iraq with 9/11 as when there really is no relationship between the two, calling Iraq the war on terrorism when it's got nothing to do with the terrorism. It had to
exactly.
do with Saddam Hussein. He's basically lying to these kids. Did anybody call him on his lies?
No, he gave his speech and left on his helicopter.
Tragic. You know, Tony Blair couldn't have gotten away with that.
And according to the White House pool report this morning, there were almost no protesters along the few mile ride from where he landed to the stadium.
Well, of course there weren't. They herded them off into free speech zones with barbed wire fences and police with guns.
Well, my guess is, given that Annapolis is sort of the, there's not a whole lot of Democrats in the actual city who live there. They're mostly wealthy bone owners. Bush is apparently going to perhaps go to different Republicans and try what he calls a sympathy offensive in his next round of speeches. He's going to be talking about the people who are disrupted about the base closing, but the White House is not expected to really try and change any of the base closings, including in John Thune's state, South Dakota, who particularly campaigned on the fact that he would be able to keep his base open because of his closeness to the Bush administration.
And so John Thune is going to get toasted here. Of course, he's not up for re-election for another 5 years, so
right.
You know, there'll be plenty of time for that to fade from memory, and that's probably what both he and Bush are counting on.
Exactly, and so that will be kind of interesting. The other thing is, of course,
In fact, they'll probably figure out a way to either blame it on Clinton or Daschle. Pardon
right.
my interrupting you.
Also, the North Korean government said today that reports that they're on the verge of conducting a nuclear test is a fabrication, and so we'll see what that happens.
Well, that's what the South Koreans have been saying.
That's right.
It's amazing. So, our ally, South Korea, has been saying that we've been lying about North Korea being about to test a nuclear device, that Bush is just trying to terrorize Americans.
Well, it's not just that. It's a way of getting more money in the budget.
Well, the Pentagon budget, the defense budget.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. He's trying to terrify, Bush is trying to terrorize members of Congress then.
Well, that's right. And by getting the American people to say, you must do something about Korea. And, you know, one of the things that I knew this was coming, because the other day in the line at the White House, there was a bunch of Koreans. I said, what are you doing here? Oh, we're going to a briefing on North Korea.
Oh,
okay.
My.
Yeah. Now we know what they're doing.
Yeah. Amazing. Ellen Radner.
Have a great weekend. We won't be on with you on Monday.
Okay, great. We'll see you on Wednesday then in Washington, D.C.
You got it.
Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much, Ellen. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. The place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Secondhand news, yes, indeed. Time for, firsthand news, I'd say. It's time for our best of the rest of the news segment on the Tom Hartman radio program. Welcome back. Here we are broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, streaming coast to coast on the Sirius satellite radio system, and beaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, American FM on Live 365, and in cable systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. Welcome back to our program. For our best of the rest of the news segment today, we have Matthew Rothschild. Matthew is the editor of the Progressive magazine, which is one of the leading voices for peace and social justice in this country. Welcome, Matthew.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me back on.
It's great to have you here. And Jeff Tiedrich is the founder and editor of SmirkingChimp.com. Of course, you can find out all about them at smirkingschimp.com. Surprise, surprise. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on again. And hello to you, Matthew. It's nice to be on with you.
Likewise, Jeff.
Yeah, you guys, a couple of great websites. And, of course, The Progressive, also a great publication. It's progressive.org is your website, isn't it, Matthew?
Yeah, that's right, Tom.
Progressive.org, yeah.
I just want to say at the top, I'm posting something this afternoon that I'm sure your listeners are going to want to see, and that is a new story that we just reported out here that I've written called Stripping Rumsfeld and Bush of Impunity. I don't think a lot of people understood when Amnesty International had a press conference this week that Amnesty International, catch this, was calling on foreign governments to apprehend Bush and Rumsfeld for their possible involvement in war crimes.
Whoa. Yeah. Oh, I completely missed that. And of course, I didn't read the entire report. But Matthew, in fact, this is with our best, the rest of the news segment. We want to start out with what's the news of the week, and so why don't you take the lead on this and talk about it, and then we'll go to Jeff.
Well, it's just an incredible thing because Bush and Rumsfeld both have been so involved in this torture scandal. You know, they blame it on a few bad apples. My view is there were a few bad apples, and their names were Gonzalez, Rumsfeld, and Bush, and now it's
Cheney.
And Cheney, too, and, a couple other people. But it's gotten so bad that there's no accountability in this country. That is, you can't expect Gonzalez, who's eyeball deep into the thing himself, to start indicting people. The Republicans who control Congress, they're not going to draw bills of impeachment. They're not going to get a special investigator on it, and Gonzalez is not going to appoint a special prosecutor. So who's going to bring these guys to justice? According both to Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, Rumsfeld may have committed war crimes, and Amnesty International says Bush did too. And so Amnesty International is calling on foreign governments, when Bush or Rumsfeld come into their territory, to nab these guys. Isn't that amazing?
So who's going to take this seriously? I mean, other than Fidel Castro and Lula. I mean,
it's interesting because I did make a few calls to embassies, the South African embassy, the Venezuelan embassy, the Belgium, the French, the German, and none of them, for diplomatic reasons, wants to say, we're getting out the handcuffs and the whistle here.
Yeah, I can't imagine that any of them are going to go near it.
So, but the guys at Amnesty International understand that. They're not naive. They don't expect this to happen overnight. But the head of Amnesty International USA, Bill Schultz, told me, he said, look, there's no statute of limitations on this thing. So maybe after Rumsfeld and Bush are out of office, they won't be able to travel very much.
Well,
that's slim solace for us who want to see this country, leaders of this country, obey the law. But that's what's going on.
Yeah, we had George Galloway on our program yesterday, the British MP. And I raised this issue with him of war crimes. You know, is Bush guilty of war crimes? Is Blair guilty of war crimes? And George Galloway said, absolutely, they're guilty of war crimes, and you can bet that they will never be prosecuted. He said, we have a system where the winners always skate away. And then he used the example of Henry Kissinger. He said, this guy has more blood on his hands for war crimes than probably any other modern war criminal, at least any living war criminal. And yet he's still, he's still making millions. He's still, skating by. So he said, Bush and Blair, they're never going to be prosecuted.
Yeah. And Bush and Blair could be prosecuted for going to war without a just cause and without getting approval of the UN Security Council. But this is something different. This is Bush's involvement in the torture scandal by signing memos, and Rumsfeld by signing memos that tell people that the Geneva Conventions don't apply,
right,
and just winking at the torture that's going on below them.
Yeah, a remarkable story from the Progressive, Progressive.org, Progressive Magazine. Matthew Rothschild, thank you for that. Jeff Tiedrich, what's the hot news on Smirk?
I wanted to talk about the filibuster compromise or lack thereof, but just to touch on the war crimes thing, I wanted to add that a federal judge has ordered the Pentagon, the Army, to release more Abu Ghraib photos, and that may aid the case. The ACLU had sued, and yesterday a judge ruled that indeed the American public had a right to see more photos.
Which means that the Muslim public is going to see it, which means that we're going to have more. I mean, there's a big protest going on right now in Pakistan as we speak.
This is true.
About the desecration of the Quran. I mean, these people are very, very flipped out about this. I think it's on the one hand, kind of tragic that any that anybody would be more concerned with a book being desecrated than with human beings being tortured and mutilated and killed, because that happened as well. But nonetheless, I mean, you have to respect people's cultures and religions, and this is These guys went over the edge. They had no plan for this war. They had no plan for the occupation. They had no rational plan for even how to interrogate prisoners. And now we're operating, I brought this up with Galloway yesterday. They're operating five concentration camps down in Cuba, and they're building a death chamber in one of them. And the rest of the world is looking at us with their jaws hitting the floor. And Bush is just going on like, yes, this is a democratic values. This is what we do.
So as with the Downing Street memo, it remains to be seen if the media will bother to report on these new photos.
Yeah.
They might. I mean, it's sensationalistic enough. This is the kind of stuff that they gravitate to, the raw central sensationalistic.
Well, and if they don't, Murdoch will pick it up and publish it in the Sun. You know,
and then
Fox News will complain about it, which Murdoch also owns. So Jeff, you said you also wanted to talk about the filibuster.
Well, the compromise, everyone calls it a compromise, but I like what Russ Feingold said. Was he said a compromise at the point of a gun is not a compromise.
Yeah.
I'm really, I go back and forth on my mind on this. The Democrats, did they get outmaneuvered? Was it just that they didn't have enough votes? I really haven't read anything conclusive on that. Though what Russ Feingold talks about a compromise at the point of the gun, I would presume that the Democrats did not have enough votes to override the nuclear option. It's a shame. I think that they framed it wrong from the very beginning. The Republicans said, well, we have to compromise on these 10 judges. And nobody really came back clearly and said, no, we already had a compromise. We had some 200-odd judges. We let about 190 get approved, and these are the 10.
Well,
and
not only that, many of those 10 already had been voted on. Priscilla Owen had already been voted on by the whole Senate. She had her up and down vote.
You're absolutely correct.
I am astounded that no Democrat stood up and said, she's already had her up and down vote. It was 4 years ago, and we rejected her. Sorry.
Absolutely.
You don't change the I guess they do change.
Well, they
the
do.
Rules.
They do. They do whatever they want because they can, because no one will stop them.
Yeah.
And,
so
it's just sad to see that happen. And so we have a compromise that says, well, we'll get these three in, and I'm willing to bet that for the next seven, they call for another compromise.
Yeah.
Oh well, let's do give us six, give us five, whatever. They'll just keep moving the goalposts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's already we see Lindsey Graham starting to change his story on what the compromise was already all about. Jeff Tiedrich, have you heard the news that John Thune is talking about voting against Bolton? Might this be his way of getting back at the Bush administration for closing a base there when he campaigned successfully against Tom Daschle by saying that he would be able to keep the base because he was good friends with Bush?
Yeah, that's rather hypocritical of him, isn't it?
Yes. Matthew Rothschild, the Progressive, I'm wondering what your take is on this and what other stories you see in the news this week.
Well, I mean, on the filibuster question, I got to agree with Jeff. I mean, I was hoping that the Democrats would call Frist's bluff, because there he was. He was holding a pistol to the head of the puppy that is the U.S. Senate and said,
right,
I'm going to blow up this puppy unless you guys give us what we've always wanted, which was these right-wing judges. And the Democrats said, finally, we'll give you almost all the judges you want. Why didn't the Democrats say, if you want to destroy this democratic tradition the Senate has had for 200 years, you can go ahead and do it, and you're going to have to pay the price. And the price for Frist would have been he would have lost a lot of power in 2006, and his presidential aspirations, I think, would have gone down the tubes. But instead, the Democrats blinked. I mean, they got to stop doing that. I mean, the Republicans, they don't play by the rules. They make up the rules. They got the power. And the Democrats just sit there, and when the Republicans throw these spitballs or these beanballs at them, the Democrats tend to duck, and they've got to get over that.
Yeah, and so how, Matthew, do we help the Democrats get over that? Is it a matter of electing more progressives and just gradually changing the face of the Democratic Party, or do you think that they're so intimidated by the right-wing talk machine and the mainstream media being captured by huge multinational corporations that we need to be applying pressure through the media and through direct action, contacting them, calling them, picketing, showing up, that sort of thing.
I'm for all of the above, and I think pressure can be brought by progressives at the grassroots and through the media and through shows like yours on Democrats who waver and think they can get away with it, or on Democrats who used to only hear from their corporate constituents, really, and not their real constituents. People can put the heat on these guys so that they will finally, listen to their progressive constituents. And there are a lot of us out here. So, like on Bolton, on Social Security, on a lot of these issues, the Democrats have just got to stand firm. It would be a great June, wouldn't it, if Bolton was banished from the UN? Or here's another story that was in the press today. Tom DeLay, you know, if Tom DeLay finally got put in the dock for his campaign finance shenanigans, that would be a June to remember.
Yeah, I just did a 20-minute rant on this. The judge could have fined Tom DeLay's TrimPAC $59 million and essentially put them out of business the way that judges in the past have put out of business Nazis and KKKers. And instead, he simply awarded to the five Democrats who got ripped off, lost their elections because of DeLay's illegal actions, he simply awarded to them court costs and lawyers' fees.
But you were absolutely right that the judge was probably wondering about repercussions.
Yeah, oh, you were listening to that.
I was listening to that.
I'm thinking, you know, this judge is worried if he goes home, his house is going to be burned down because DeLay and these guys, they behave like the Sopranos. It's not, but in any case. So, Jeff Tiedrich, what are you seeing on the horizon? What do you see coming up in the next week, the next month? What are the stories that right now look like little tiny stories that you think may become big stories?
Well, I think we're going to have a quiet week next week because Congress is on vacation and you know, Bolton's on hold. But Bolton will be a big story the week following. It'd be interesting to see which Republicans will vote against him. I think that of all the fights that the Democrats have been up against lately, this one is really could actually win this one.
Yeah. The Bolton one you're talking about.
The Bolton one, yeah. I'd like to see that actually happen, that or not happen. I'd like to see him get not confirmed.
Yeah.
These Abu Ghraib photos could be very interesting. I don't mean that in a titillating way. I mean what the fallout from that could be interesting.
Right, especially if it blows back in the White House.
Yeah, I've been reading this article from the AP, and I've been trying to determine. It doesn't say anything about the government appealing. I presume there is some sort of appeal process. So I don't know how quickly these photographs are going to get out. Certainly, we're not going to see them on Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay. And Matthew Rothschild, editor of the Progressive, progressive.org. What do you see coming up on the horizon?
Well, to me, the story that just won't go away is this Iraq story, the Iraq war. I mean, it's just not getting any better. We were told every turn of the road that it was going to be the huge turnaround and things were going to change. But there the United States is. It's losing, you know, 50, 60 soldiers a month we're losing over there and 600 soldiers getting wounded a month over there. And it's at some point, I think the American people are going to say, we got to get out of there. And Bush has no interest and no desire, no inclination to get out of there. So that story isn't going
to
go away.
Well, I think
and
what happened
I read in the paper today that they're going to mount an offensive in Baghdad itself. I mean, that's
right.
Going to be chaos.
We just had the second bloodiest month in the history of the war, and we had Scotty McClellan two, 3 days ago in a press conference say the way that we know that we're winning is that they're attacking us more frequently, and that proves that they're scared to death and that therefore we're winning. So the more American soldiers who die, the closer we are to winning. And the question that I have is, how do you know when you're losing?
And how many do you need to have killed before you declare victory, if that's what they're going to do?
And the bigger question, and I'd like to, we have about 2 minutes left, I'd like to put this to both of you and give you each a shot at it, is when are the Democrats, or how can we help encourage the Democrats, when are the Democrats going to figure out that the majority of Americans are opposed to this war, they want the kids coming home, and stop funding this insanity and start putting their foot down and stop pussyfooting around and thinking that they've got to, you know, act macho and that the way to do that is to support the war in Iraq? First, Jeff, your thoughts on this. Jeff,
I think they're not going to change their mind until we start to make a lot of noise on the left. We need to be calling their offices. We need to be running editorials. We need to just be very loud and very vocal about that, louder than the other side.
Yeah, and call your elected members of Congress at 1-877-SOB-USOB, which is the telephone number, the toll-free telephone number for the Capitol Hill switchboard. You can reach any senator or any member of Congress, 1-877-SOB-USOB, the letter U. And Matthew Rothschild, your thoughts on that question.
I agree with Jeff. We just have to bring pressure to bear here. I mean, even activist groups like MoveOn.org have been ambivalent on this, and this isn't an issue to be ambivalent on. We got to get U.S. troops out of there before the end of the year, and we've got to demand that our elected officials stop paying the bills for it. That's finally what got us out of Vietnam.
What about the the Fox News sort of spin from the other side that if we set a date, that will cause the insurgents to just dig in their heels even further and wait us out?
But the thing that's causing the insurgents to do all their damage, or almost all their damage, is our very presence there.
That's right. They're nationalists. They're saying, hey, our country's occupied, just like yours was in 1776. Get out of here. is what they're saying, right?
Yeah, and the amazing thing is Bush won't want to go out, even if the Iraqi government told him to go, just like in Afghanistan when Karzai said he wanted release of Afghan detainees and control of the foreign troops there, our foreign troops. So it's a joke that, you know, these governments that we're propping up are independent, but we should let the people of Iraq decide what's going to happen and not be there as a lightning rod for a civil war that we've already created.
Well said. Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive, progressive.org. Jeff Tiedrich, editor of SmirkingChimp.com. Your final thoughts on this topic?
I agree with Matthew. It's going to be difficult to get Bush to withdraw the troops. You know, there was an article in The Guardian this week that four massive military bases are currently under construction.
Right, and we're spending more money to build the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad than it will cost to rebuild the World Trade Center. Over $1 billion we're spending to build the embassy, and
which
is going to house over 1,000 people in Baghdad. I mean, something weird is going on there. There's something very strange. Matthew Rothschild with The Progressive, Progressive.org, Progressive Magazine. Jeff Tiedrich, the founder and editor of SmirkingChimp.com. Thanks both for being here with us, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thank you, Tom.
Keep up the good work.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
His name was Medgar Evers, and he walked his road alone, like Emmett Till and thousands more whose names we'll never know.
And welcome back, my friends.
They tried to burn his home, and they beat him to the ground. But deep inside, they both knew what it took to bring him down. Too many martyrs and too many dead. Too many lies, too many empty words were said. Too many times for too many angry men. Oh, let it never be again.
Well, I have a feeling it is again. I'm sorry, Phil Oakes, I believe that was, wasn't it, Louise? Yeah, Phil Oakes. I think we're there. I think you've got a judge in Texas who is so afraid of Tom DeLay that he's just awarding court costs and lawyers' fees to five Democrats whose elections were stolen, whose House seats were stolen by the illegal activities of TRIMPAC, Tom DeLay's political action committee, found guilty in court yesterday, or was it yesterday or today, one or the other. And how is the mainstream media going to deal with this? How is the corporate-owned media in America going to deal with this? I'll bet you. Well, you know, what can I bet? I'm not a gambling junkie. How can I say it? I guarantee. Well, I can't guarantee it, but I'll bet that you will not hear any mention in the mainstream media, in any of them. Even I suspect Keith Olbermann, the one guy who sometimes dances out on the edge of the possibility that this judge has been intimidated or threatened or that he's in the pocket of Tom DeLay. Nobody's going to talk about that. They're simply going to report the story. Hey, this is how he ruled. Shelley in Phoenix on the line. Hey, Shelley, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I have quite a few thoughts, and I'm going to try and get them all out there, and they kind of go with what we just heard from your other guests.
Okay, I may have to hold you over to the next hour. We have 26 seconds.
Then let's hold me over.
Okay.
I mean, I'm like a volcano ready to explode.
Oh, really?
Everything you just touched on is everything I think, and I just have a few things I would like to add to that.
All right.
So
well,
I'll wait the 26.
Shelley, yeah, stick around. We'll talk about it after the news at the top of the next hour. I appreciate your call and your passion. And if anybody else would like to call and get in on the conversation, our number 1-866-889-8894 to be on the Tom Hartman radio program. And, of course, you're welcome to drop into our chat room. It's well-populated today. Today, Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, happy end of the week, whatever's appropriate for you. Drop into TomHartman.com and click Live Chat, and that will get you into our chat room. We'll share some thoughts from our chat room, some thoughts from email. We'll have Shelley's phone call and others as we come back in a few minutes. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the radio support group of, by, and for We the people, as they say in that old document, the Constitution. We the people of the United States of America.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to our program. Tom Hartman here with you, where being progressive never felt so good. Welcome back to our program. Just quickly, some correspondence off our message board, our chat room, and an email. Liz in Pennsylvania, responding to the debate yesterday that I had with a caller who was saying that if I was opposed to monopolies, I should be opposed to unions. And I was saying, no, you don't get it. Unions are the prevent monopolies, I mean, at least in the workplace. The unions are the other half of the power balance that you have to have democracy, to have a balanced system. Anyhow, she says, and Kevin was saying, Kevin was going on and on about how, you know, you can only build buildings here if you're union, blah, 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 blah. Anyhow, Liz says, I wish I'd been able to listen live today. She apparently podcasts the program off WhiteRoseSociety.org. We have an increasing number of people who are grabbing the podcast there, which is great. Anyhow, she says, I wish I'd been able to listen live today. Kevin in Philadelphia, who thinks unions are destructive monopolies, is a fool. Philadelphia and Lancaster are, A, not abutting counties. Chester is in between them. And she says, link to a map below. Kind of important. That was the Battle of Brandywine. Duh. And B, workers in Philadelphia get more than those in Lancaster because the cost of living is higher here than there. Same reason our non-union white-collar workers make more than those in Lancaster. The fact is, says Liz, most home construction and rehab in Philadelphia is performed by small non-union contractors, and the union lock on large construction has done nothing to dampen the development of skyscrapers, stadiums, and the like, she says parenthetically, unfortunately. So, yeah. And also, I have to say, in the chat room, I have confessed to the story of how I slept my way to the top of the radio business. If you want to find out, you have to go to TomHartman.com and click live chat, and probably somebody will cut and paste what I said and let you know about it. Anyhow, also, Shireen writes, this was from the third hour of the program yesterday, which is why I wanted to get to it here, and then we're going to get to your calls. Your eloquent commentary during the third hour today about Tiananmen Square, the papier-mâché Statue of Liberty, how the Chinese students were quoting Thomas Paine and Thomas Jefferson, well, it just broke my heart. She says, I emigrated to this country not because of economic activity, or opportunity, rather. I would have done just fine financially in Malaysia like the rest of my family. She says, I worked hard to become a U.S. citizen out of love, respect, and admiration for the ideals and values that America represented based on the foundation set by people like Thomas Jefferson. Where, she writes, where did that America go? I am totally bewildered and saddened by what Junior has done to us. It amazes me that so many Americans take this country for granted and are not paying attention to the damage being done by the neocons and the insane religious right. It's so sad to see the erosion of those ideals I value so much. She says, I know you're busy, Tom. No need to reply. Just wanted to share these thoughts with you. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And I've got a pile of news here also I want to get to. But Shelley in Phoenix has been patiently waiting. Hey, Shelley, what's up?
Hi. First of all, now I know how one gets into radio. So I will keep that in mind.
Where are you in our chat room?
I always wondered. No, you just talked about how one gets into radio, and if it were that, if I had known it was that simple,
you just sleep your way to the top.
Yeah.
That's
anyway,
simple.
Also, what that email you just read about being saddened by what's happened in America,
yeah.
And that's pretty much what leads me to my thoughts today. The other side, probably the strongest thing they have going for them is one voice. They speak in one voice.
Yeah.
They vote party line. They control all branches of government. They control the media. There's no getting away from it. It is so frustrating. No matter how right we are or how many messages there are, we just can't seem to make a difference. Why? The public doesn't even know what's going on. And so the first thing I would say is that Democrats have to find a way to speak in one voice. As far as senators and congressmen...
Let me just interrupt you, Shelley, there. Why are you suggesting that if the other side does something that is less than honest and that is not good for democracy, the Democrats should do the same thing?
First of all, it's not necessarily less than honest speaking in one voice.
Well, come on. You know that
right.
The one voice that they're
because,
speaking in
because
is not honest.
Because you know why?
people are hearing what they're saying, but they're not hearing what the other side is saying.
Yeah.
They hear through church. They hear through whatever the number is. I think it's 40,000 hours of conservative talk and 3,000 hours of liberal talk on talk shows on cable and on TV. It's two conservatives for every liberal. Our message isn't getting out there. When we speak in terms of judges and talking about getting Bush getting 95%, 95% of what? Most Americans don't know what 95% means, but they know what 208 out of 218. They know what that means. If they would hear it over and over and over,
yeah,
they would get the message.
Yeah,
now,
and as I said earlier, why haven't the Democrats been saying, hey, Patricia Owen already got her up or down vote.
But we
she was actually voted on 4 years ago in the United States Senate, and she lost the vote.
Which is why I say, when are we going to get one talking point?
Yeah.
And even it,
well, I can tell you, Howard Dean
is repeated over and over.
You know, and let me assure you, Shelley, that Howard Dean is working on that. I spent some time with his brother Jim over the weekend here in Portland, who is running Democracy for America, the organization that Howard started, and is very close, as you can imagine, with his brother Howard Dean.
Right.
And this is on their list. You know, getting folks on message. The problem is that the cons, not just the Republicans, because the Republicans didn't do this. The Richard Mellon Scaife,
right,
Joe Coors, right-wing, hardcore, economic interest Republicans,
absolutely,
25 or 30 years ago, started putting together this giant machine. They brought in the religious folks as, in their minds, suckers. I mean, they're playing these people for suckers. They brought them in with abortion and fear of homosexuality and said, okay, you know, we'll trumpet these issues if it'll get you in here to vote for us. And they then took over the Republican Party. The message is not coming out of the Republican Party. The message is coming out of this right-wing machine. And
right,
the problem is that there is no progressive machine at the moment. There is none.
That's what I want to talk to you about. You're right about all of that, and I agree about all of that. So if we look at that, we say, what can we do to change anything? We can't keep jobs from not going to China. We can't fix, we can't do,
sure,
anything. We are stuck right now because we have no voice. They control all aspects of government. So the first thing that we have to be concerned about right now is 2006. So what do,
yeah,
we have to do? We have to go back to basics. We know that as far as the voting system in this country works right now, we will never win again.
Yeah.
Never, never, Shelley, never.
Shelley, I'm right there with you, and I absolutely agree, and I appreciate your calling and raising these issues. There is, yes, we have to take back the voting machines. We have to start building the party from the ground up. We need to get politically active. People need to join Democracy for America. They need to join the Democratic Party. They need to join the Greens, for that matter. Even, you know, and the Democratic Party. We need to infiltrate from within, and we need to have a progressive revolution in America. It's just that simple. Very straightforward, and you said it very well. Thank you very much. Scott in San Diego on the line. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. I have an observation and then a question. I really think the Republicans hated Clinton, primarily because he was a Republican, we've talked about that before, but because he stood in the way of the Constitution Exile movement, which they've been working on for close to 25 years. I think he got completely in the way of their wanting to attack the federal courts with these extreme judges.
Yeah.
And here's
I would say that was part of it. I would say that, you know, part of it was that he didn't entirely go along with the corporatist agenda, although he certainly rolled over with NAFTA, GATT, and the Telecommunications Act, which is what, you know, made it all possible.
The Telecommunications Act was one of the worst things that man did for this country,
yes,
for us.
To this country. Let's, yes.
Yeah. Secondly, Tom, I'm looking at some interesting trends in society right now, but what I'm seeing in short is that the shows like yours are gaining in popularity rapidly all across the country.
Yes.
And people are turning increasingly, while at the same time, conservative talk shows and conservative programming is declining.
Fox News rapidly. In the last 6 months has gone from 1.5 million viewers in an average quarter hour, or an average hour, rather, down to fewer than 500,000, as I recall. The last statistics I saw, or it's in the neighborhood of half a million. It's just a dramatic drop.
Well, good. Given these statistics right here, these observations, I think the critical issue in 2006 will be voting machines. They're going to have to try to control the voting that way because enough people by now...
Well, I think they already have. As I've said many times, I believe that they stole the election in Georgia.
Absolutely.
You know, I am absolutely convinced the election was stolen in Georgia. And John Conyers found in Ohio clear instances of voting machine fraud and tampering. And he comes right out and says it, you know, and it's right there in the book, What Went Wrong in Ohio, in the Conyers Report. So, yeah, absolutely.
I think it's going to be a bigger issue, though. I think they're going to try to put voting machines in more.
Oh, yeah. And you've got now Mayor Bloomberg in New York 3 days ago comes out and says, oh, you know, and they're all, by the way, repeating the same mantra. So obviously the voting machine companies are pushing this thing really hard, you know, in the back end, in the back channels. They're all saying the exact same thing. You turn on a light, you use a computer. You make a telephone call, you use a computer. You get on a train or a subway, it's computer operated. Your car has a computer. There's computers everywhere. Your refrigerator has a computer in it. They're completely reliable. You can trust them. Why shouldn't we have computerized voting? That's what they're saying.
I work in the business. You can't trust computers.
I know. Any IT professional listens to this, you know, and goes, what?
Yeah, it's a joke. You gotta have a trail. And the code for the machines in Las Vegas is open and public source, and it has to be, and it's required by Nevada.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, the gambling software is tightly controlled, and it has to be open. It is open for Nevada Gambling Commission. It has to be.
It's open source.
It's open source. It's open source in the way that Nevada Gaming Commission has complete access to all code for all machines that run gambling. That's how they regulate.
That's amazing. So the gambling, the software for the gambling machines in the state of Nevada, they provide the code for that software to the government of the state of Nevada. But ES&S and Diebold and Trident and all these other companies here in the United States, they say that they have no legal obligation to provide the software. In fact, they have the rights of privacy. They have trade secrets, so they can't provide, they won't provide the software to the state governments where they're selling the machines, or to the federal government, which is supposed to have oversight over this under HAVA.
And that doesn't make any sense. It makes absolutely no sense.
It makes perfect sense if you're trying to steal elections.
And so I think, again, back to the topic, that voting machines, they're going to try to control voting machines and spread them more and more. I think Governor Schwarzenegger is trying to do that here in California.
Oh, absolutely. Why do you think he got rid of Kevin, was it Shelley or Sheely? Kevin Sheely, the Secretary of State there who kicked out the voting machines. You can bet they're coming back.
Exactly.
You
so
can
how,
bet they're coming
how,
back.
How can we stop this? How can we stop this?
The way you stop it, the way that we stop it is the same way that we stopped slavery. It's the same way that we ended prohibition. It's the same way. You know, it's the same way that every major social change has happened in the United States. You educate enough people until a critical mass is reached, and then the forces that would work against that have no more power. They just, you know, their power base evaporates. And it's what you're doing right now, Scott. Start calling talk shows. Start raising the topic. Get it on people's radar screens. Find information. I wrote two pieces about this that are, you know, quite informative. You'll find them. Go to TomHartmann.com. Click on Articles on Democracy and look for the articles. If you want to steal an election, just control the voting machine, and the theft of your vote is just a chip away. And print them out and pass them out and share them with everybody you know. That's what we've got to do. Scott, thanks for the call. 20 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Third time I've said that. I'll probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
You got to
catapult the propaganda.
Ah, yes, catapult the old propaganda.
Razzle dazzle, you razzle dazzled them.
Yes, he did.
You gave them an act with lots of flash in it, made them believe. Compassionate,
oh, yeah.
Gave them the old hocus pocus. You misdirected them with 9/11 and Saddam Hussein.
Oh my, wasn't it a show? Wasn't
you
it a show?
Played them both right to perfection, despite the fact there's no connection. You razzle-dazzled them, let those blue states complain.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Just as long as I'm dictator, yeah. 1-866-889-8894. Welcome back to our program. Tom Hartmann here with you, and Dale in Nebraska on the line. Hey, Dale, thanks for calling the Tom Hartmann Program.
I've got kind of a novel idea here.
Okay.
You know, as I've made my political contributions, it seems as though nothing changes. Maybe it's time that we find a progressive analyst and we all start putting our money into progressive mutual funds that only we only buy into domestic upstart American companies, that will sign a pact with the fund that there will never be any outsourcing. And, you know, maybe it's time that we speak more with our dollars, since it seems to me our vote isn't really being heard.
Here's the problem.
What do you think of that?
You know, broadly, it's a nice idea, Dale, but here's the problem. Let's use a different metaphor. Let's use the sports metaphor that the guy from Ayn Rand tried to use yesterday. Let's say that we're trying to play baseball. Everybody's familiar with the rules of baseball. And let's say we're playing baseball, and the organization that defines the rules, the baseball league, I don't know sports well enough to know who sets the rules for baseball, but let's say it's the league, okay? And the league says the rules are if you're the team from place A, then you have 5 strikes and you're out. And if you're the place from team B, you only get 2 strikes and you're out. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the rules. And so team A and team B, you know, it's not an even playing field, shall we say. And what you're suggesting is, okay, we're team B, we only get 2 strikes. So what we should do is we should go in there and we should swing harder and faster. And what I'm saying is, no, we should be attacking the rule makers. We should be changing the rules. And the bottom line is that the companies that you're talking about boycotting, essentially, you know, you wouldn't want to invest in Walmart, for example.
Right.
They're not doing anything illegal. They're doing stuff by the rules. But the rules are set up in such a way that if you're a big multinational corporation, you get 5 strikes. If you're a CEO and you commit a crime, you get 10 or 20 strikes. If, on the other hand, you're a small business person, you're running a small business trying to compete with these guys, you get 1 strike. And if you don't get it right, you're toast. And if you commit even some small crime, you go to prison. And so, you know, what we need to do is we need to change the rules. We need a fundamental change of the rules of business in the United States. We need to go back to enforcement of the Sherman Act, of the Sherman Antitrust Act. We need to break up the big monopolies, whether they be media monopolies or whether they be other kinds of monopolies, right across the board, the oil monopolies. I mean, we're back in the era of the robber barons. And they fixed that with the Sherman Antitrust Act and then Teddy Roosevelt in 1907, making it a felony for corporations to contribute to political campaigns. And we need to go back to that kind of fix. And that requires not so much economic action, because we can boycott Walmart all day long and people are still going to buy from them. And we can invest in local green companies all day long, but you're still going to have Chevron come in and eat your lunch if you try and be a local oil company. What we need to do is we need to get politically active and change the rules of the game at the level of politics. Does that make sense? Dale?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, don't be sorry. I mean, I'm totally in favor of green investing and ethical investing. I think it's a good thing. You know, and I encourage it. But really, we need to change the rules of the game.
Well, I agree. I just, it bothers me to know that I'm putting money into a mutual fund that is actually supporting the multinational effort.
I understand. And people who have enough money to put into a mutual fund, which is a lot of Americans, you know, their retirement money and whatnot. You have to do the thing that is going to get you the best return. And I don't think that there's any foul in that. You do that and change the rules of the game. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's a strange old game, you learn it slow. One step forward and it's back to go.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Or 37 and a half minutes after the hour, depending on how you want to calculate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Chris in Woburn, Massachusetts, on the line. Chris, I have a very strange question to ask you before you come on and, you know, whatever question you have.
Sure.
Why is it that on our caller ID, your phone number is showing up as 00001-23456?
Oh, no, I'm calling from Skype.
You're calling from space?
No. It's an online voice over the internet.
Oh, you're using a VoIP number.
Voice
over internet protocol. Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay. It's just I've never seen anything like that before in my life. I mean, you know, it's usually it either shows a phone number or it shows blocked, you know, something like that. And
yeah, I tried to set the number setting in there for it.
Yeah,
but it didn't take, I guess. But
that's amazing. Well, it's kind of cool, actually. Anyhow, so what's up, Chris?
Well, just about 10 minutes ago, I was listening to one of your callers, and she seemed really disturbed over how none of our messages seem to get through to, I guess you could say, in the realm of the mass media.
Yeah, although I'm not sure that, first of all, that premise is absolutely accurate. I think that a lot of our messages are getting through, and that's why Bush's approval rating now is in the 30% rank, lower than it's been at any time in his presidency since he was first selected, and everybody knew he was an illegitimate president. And he needed 9/11 to bring him out of that, and I just, you know, pray to God that he's not going to come up with another 9/11 to try and pull him out of this tank.
Well, I don't think I could credit the mass media with much of that effect. You know, if a lot of people are you know, sort of bailing, you know, away from television, heading to the internet and trying to get information, really trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And television, you know, mass media is following in that wake a little bit to keep its credibility. I don't think we should really try and credit mass media with that that trend. That's not what I'm seeing.
So what's your point, Chris?
I'm calling because, you know, I see all this, you know, analysis going on how the administration is trying to control the mass media, and you know, why is it happening, and why are they taking orders from the administration, et cetera. I think. In some respect, the analysis is a little bit backwards. There's this assumption that the command and control part, you know, the forcing part of this relationship between government and media, is necessarily coming from the government. And I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, since the Telecommunications Act that you were just talking about a little while ago, we've seen a trend where, you know, they took the advantages from that Telecommunications Act, and they basically said, okay, Clinton, you know, sayonara, you're toast.
Yeah, yeah. So your point is that what we're seeing is the natural response of a corporate media to so-called freedom in the marketplace, that they control the marketplace. They no longer have a responsibility to we the people. They no longer have to demonstrate community service. They no longer have to have news programming that fulfills their service to the community obligations. And so, therefore, we've got infotainment, lowest common denominator news, and news that historically or that consistently will be skewed in a way that benefits the corporate media and those who own and control it.
Yeah, particularly the latter,
you
just said.
Yeah.
Everything is skewed toward the installment.
I got it. And good point that you made, Chris. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. I'm not disagreeing. In fact, that's what I've been saying all along. The big problems right now with the media in the United States, the main problem is that historically media knew that it had an obligation to the public, to serve the local community. Newspapers, for example, from the founding of this country, newspapers were subsidized. They still are to this day. The subsidy that they received in large part was a postal subsidy, although they also, for the first 50 years or so of this country, the manufacture and sale of newsprint was actually subsidized with tax dollars. That's how strongly the founders felt that it was important to have a strong media. As Thomas Jefferson said, he'd rather live in a nation with newspapers and no government than in a nation with a government and no newspapers. And so they made sure that they were going to actually have both, that they were going to have a government and they were going to have newspapers. And it wasn't until William Randolph Hearst came along and started, you know, badly abusing that privilege that the government started backing off on the backdoor financing of newsprint. And although we still subsidize the mail delivery, the postal delivery of newspapers, although not many people get their newspapers delivered by mail, some still do, and it's a much, you know, if you're a newspaper, you have this special fourth-class rate that you can mail at that's incredibly, incredibly cheap. compared to any other form of mail, particularly given how much newspapers weigh. So there was that. And then with radio and television, when they came along, and then cable when it came along, in all cases we said, hey, if you're going to use our airwaves, if you're going to use our rights of way to string your cable systems, then you have some obligation to perform a service to the community in exchange for use of this part of the commons. That there's this thing called the commons, the stuff that we all collectively own. And your obligation to the community to participate in the commons is very straightforward, very simple, very clear, very clean, very obvious, and that is provide news. And most people think that it was just community service announcements, the PSAs that you'd hear. You know, there's a meeting at the ladies' lunch this afternoon or tomorrow at the Library League, or next week it's going to be over at the Grange, or the VFW's getting, you know, that kind of thing. And the announcements that we used to hear 15, 20 years ago on radio stations and television stations about what was going on, the community calendar stuff. Well, yes, that was done to fulfill the public service and requirements, but the public service requirements required much more than just that. And the way that radio and TV stations accomplished that was with news. And that required that the news actually serve the public interest. Well, in 1987, when Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing the Fairness Doctrine, which was part of this, and essentially stopped the community service requirement, and then in 96 or 97, when Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act, I guess it was in 97 he signed it as the Telecommunications Act of 96, when that happened, that was pretty much the end of those requirements. I mean, there's still some with regard to cable. Cable companies still have to provide a public access channel, although they're fighting it. They're fighting it aggressively. But that was the beginning of the end of meaningful news in the United States. You could no longer, you know, because then what happened was the big corporations that own the media said, hey, you know, instead of news, we're going to provide entertainment. And you know, so, but it's going to be disguised as information because people are used to getting news. And other countries saw this coming a long time ago. Deutsche Welle in Germany, BBC in the UK, I forget the acronym for the one in Italy, in Norwegian, the Norwegian News Service, Norsk, as I recall. There's all these different, in Norway, there's all these different services where the government said, you know, private corporations, they may not always report the news. They may not always serve the public interest. They're going to do what's going to make them the most amount of money. So we're going to use some of our tax dollars. We collectively are going to agree that we want to be informed. Let the chips fall where they may. The politicians may like it or they may hate it. We want to be informed. And we're willing to pay our own money to be informed. And so, you know, we created public broadcasting here in the United States. Well, now that's being hijacked by the right-wingers, too. And so what are we left with? We're left with infotainment. That's the bad news. I guess the good news is that they discovered that in the realm of infotainment, because I put talk radio, frankly, into the realm of infotainment, it's not news what I'm doing, and it's not purely entertainment, as much as Rush Limbaugh likes to protest that all he is an entertainer. It's not purely entertainment. It's a synthesis of the two. It's infotainment. It's talking about the news in a way that's interesting. I mean, there's certain rules to this thing that, you know, to make it work, right? And so infotainment came along, and I guess the good news is that the industry is waking up, the radio industry anyway, is waking up to the fact that there are people who want progressive infotainment, they want progressive talk radio, and maybe there's even a market for news, as we're seeing with the growth of Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman's program. Except that's still in the realm of non-commercial stuff. But in the commercial area, you know, maybe CNN will be able to have some success. They're surviving, they're growing, but the problem is they've become captive of, you know, another big monolithic media corporation. You know, much to Ted Turner's distress. The solution to this, as I've said before in the last call, is that we need to go back to enforcing rules that say, hey, you know, number one, if you're the media, you have to serve the public good. And number two, if you're the media, you have to serve the public good. And number two, you absolutely must be providing, good solid information. That we need to go back to having our public broadcasting is actually public broadcasting. I mean, just, you know, very straightforward, very clean. And the whole thing of Kenneth Tomlinson taking over public broadcasting, it's absolutely scary to me. I, you know, and here I am. I, you know, I'm on commercial radio. It competes with public broadcasting, and I still think that we need public broadcasting in the United States, and the right-wing machine trying to take it over. And my hope, frankly, is that as progressive talk radio gains more and more of a foothold, and you know, if you agree with this, please support your support our advertisers and let the radio station that you're listening to right now know that you're listening. It's really important. If we're successful, if Progressive Talk Radio, as Progressive Talk Radio becomes successful, then I think that the TV networks are going to say, hey, you know, maybe we made a mistake blowing off Phil Donahue. He was, after all, the highest rated show on MSNBC. Maybe there is something to this. Maybe we can make money doing this. But I don't think that we can just rely on the profit model. Just as I said before about, you know, how do you invest? Where do you invest your money? I don't think that we can just rely on the so-called free market or capitalism, because the reality is that the rules of the game are stacked against us. And what we need, the level that we need to be operating at is the level where the rules are made. That's where we need to be operating. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
There's a story circulating on the Internet, and I do not know if it's true or not. I can't confirm it or deny it. And basically, it says there's 3 points that Bush is insisting that North Korea adopt, or else the Nighthawks are going to pay him a visit.
Okay, and what are those 3 points?
The first point is that the private Federal Reserve System of the United States gets to take over their banking system.
Okay, Bush is not publicly advocating that, I guarantee you.
The second one is the economic religion model will be trichonomics.
Yeah.
And the third one is their poor must accept Viagra from the pharmaceutical industry.
Arm, a great one. Great one. Okay, you got me. You got me. It's like, where is this going? There are, you know, it is interesting. Speaking of Viagra now, 40-some-odd people are suing Viagra, saying that they took it and they went blind. And, you know, see, your high school gym teacher was right. You know, the question is, what did they do once they took it? It's a cheap shot. I'm sorry. We are discovering, however, apparently there's some side effects to it. Lonnie in Fairview, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Lonnie.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I'm trying to get a copy of your book here in Oklahoma, but, you know, I'm a little blue dot in a red state. Anyway,
which book is it that you're trying to get a copy of?
I ordered it. What Would Jefferson Do?
What Would Jefferson Do? Yeah, okay. If you ordered it, it'll come. It is in all the bookstores. The problem right now with What Would Jefferson Do is that the paperback is coming out next month. And so a lot of bookstores are not reordering the hardcovers. Instead, they're ordering the paperbacks. And whenever a book makes the transition from hardcover to paperback, there's that gap for a month or so where it's hard to find in some places. So that's, you know, they just
sold it. I ordered the hardcover. But anyway, well, the reason why I called is, I listen to all these talk shows, and nobody ever mentions a petition for redress of grievances. Why is that?
You mean the statement in the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment and in the Declaration of Independence?
Correct. Is that just kind of not a very good way of handling things, or is it, do the politicians really pay attention to it?
Well, you know, clearly they don't. Just so that everybody understands what we're talking about, let me just share with you what Lonnie's talking about. This is the entirety, the First Amendment in its entirety. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or, and here's, now notice this, listen to this very carefully, and as you're listening to this, think about George Bush setting up barbed wire cages a half a mile away from where he speaks and herding protesters into them at gunpoint, as opposed to allowing them to stand on public rights of way. These protesters taken off public streets and put into these free speech zones, or the right of people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. It's the First Amendment of the United States. Well, I'm telling you, these guys, they've shredded the First Amendment, Lonnie. They've shredded the Fourth Amendment. They're going after the Fourth Amendment now. Huge, big time, with this rewrite of the Patriot Act, that they judges don't have to be involved in issuing warrants for the FBI. So, you know, as to why people aren't talking about it, I don't know. I talk about it regularly on this program. I hope more will.
Well, I only get you 1 hour a day, so.
Yeah, okay.
I wish you were there. I wish you were a little bit more on the Sirius Radio Network.
Yeah, well, you got to you have to talk to them about that, not me.
But has anybody,
and they do carry all three of our hours of our program. They just, you know, time delay the second and third hour. That's all. But
yeah,
but in
yeah,
any
yeah.
case,
anyway, has there anybody attempted to use this in, like, say, for our media? You know, give us back our media.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that the media falls into that category, other than Congress should make no laws abridging the freedom of press. As I said, I don't think that, I see very little evidence that the government is taking control of our media. They're certainly trying to manipulate it, you know, phony press releases and things like that, which is a violation of the law, by the way. It's a violation of the Smith Act.
What about the FCC when they no longer are giving equal time to opposing views or mandating it?
Yeah, so there's nothing in the Constitution that requires that. That's simply a law that we all got together back in the 20s first, and then in 34, the second iteration of it, got together and said, this is how it should be, and so we're going to make that law. But that's not a constitutional issue. But it is something that needs to be brought up. Lonnie, thanks for the call. I got to move on.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. The place where smart people get their news, the true people's radio, truth and common sense in broadcasting. Rick Santorum looks like he might be getting in a little trouble, not unlike Tom DeLay. You'll recall Rick Santorum has proposed legislation that would make it a crime for the National Weather Service to tell us the weather that they are being paid with our tax dollars to gather. No, they only have to give it to for-profit corporations who would then sell it to us. Turns out, just before he proposed that legislation, he took a contribution from the chairman of AccuWeather. Yeah. Alan in Indiana on the line. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Yeah, I was just listening to Polish radio, and they were saying that the unions were more organized than the corporations over there.
Did you just said Polish radio?
Yeah, I was listening to it on Sirius Radio.
Oh, interesting.
They have a channel for it. It's in English. And they were saying that the unions, for a while, were more organized than the companies over there.
Oh yeah, solidarity, Lech Walesa, the whole thing. Yeah, absolutely. And the reason why was because under communism there were no companies. The state owned all the companies. The unions emerged. The unions led the democracy movement. Surprise, surprise. I mean, you know, workplace democracy. That is the definition of a union. The unions led the democracy movement, and then the government fell, and for a time there, nobody owned the factories, and then they were trying to figure out how do you assign ownership of the factories, and now they've got, you know, they're back to crony capitalism, just like Russia is, unfortunately, because they followed the advice of the IMF and the conservatives in the United States, and now they're having to deal with that problem, that they've got now an oligarchic class in Poland and in most of the other former Soviet states, a major problem, I'll tell you. And one that Putin is trying to deal with, and he's not sure, you know, what's the solution? I think he needs to read, you know, what Roosevelt did. Instead, unfortunately, he's going back toward an authoritarian answer. But interesting, Alan. Interesting.
Yeah. We need unions, that's for sure.
Yeah. We all need unions. That's definitely for sure. Alan, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. Well, it's been a great week. I hope you have a marvelous weekend. Next week we'll be broadcasting live Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We will be broadcasting live from the Take Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. That should be a hoot. Should be a lot of fun. And the program, of course, will be live Monday as well on Memorial Day. We'll see you then. Have a great weekend. Shabbat Shalom, TGIF, whatever it is for you. Have a good one. Enjoy. And thanks for being with us this week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.